Thank you, and thank you guys all for being here. I encourage the physical activity. If you guys need to stand up and stretch, I know it's getting late in the afternoon, so I'm hoping you guys can stick with me for just a little bit longer. Before I get started, I do want to acknowledge my co-authors on this study. Obviously, Dr. Andrew Kaczynski is actually my advisor at the University of South Carolina, as well Dr. Jenny Veach and Gavin Abbott at Deakin University, and then some of the help from the original creation of the tool and the GIS stuff from Sonia Wilhelm-Stanis and Ryan Bergstrom. And I have no financial relationships to disclose. So I kind of feel like I'm preaching to the choir at this point. We've had some really good presentations, starting off with the importance of parks, access to parks, park deserts. And so I am going to go over just a little bit of information on the background, but hopefully we've convinced you at this point that parks are wonderful. So obviously, following sort of the train of the rest of the presentations, physical activity, sedentary behavior, overweight and obesity are significant public health issues. We've seen a lot of presentations concerning U.S. data, but I also wanted to say that, you know, this is a worldwide public health initiative to reduce obesity, to increase physical activity. So we actually looked in this study at data from the U.S. and Australia. And so more than a third of U.S. adults are overweight or obese, and 3 in 5 in Australia, about 12 million adults, are overweight or obese. So a concern. As well, physical activity rates are still not where we want them to be. Less than half of U.S. adults are meeting recommendations, and 43% of Australians are meeting current physical activity recommendations. Like I said, we're preaching to the choir here. Obviously, you know, we've taken this change from looking at the individual to looking at the environment. What's in our environment? What access do we have to facilities and resources that promote physical activity? And parks are a really great solution to intervene upon, because they are widespread and we're working on making that even better, and that they have a low cost to access and utilize, so that there's this really great movement in public health to focus on parks and recreation to help increase physical activity, but then also a plethora of other health concerns, health behaviors, and outcomes. So just a repeat of some of the actually research that's already been cited, is that we know that parks are important behavior settings for physical activity, and that being closer to a park, proximity to park, has been shown with increased park use and park-based physical activity. But that few studies have looked at park proximity currently, which is actually wonderful that I'm following Dr. Babby's presentation, because it did explore a lot of different metrics in looking at park access in the literature. And few studies have examined the relationships between proximity to parks and multiple health outcomes. So are we looking at physical activity, obesity, BMI, those types of things together? And then, of course, this actually looked at data across multiple countries. So the purpose behind the study was really to examine the relationship between the different measures of park proximity to get a better idea of what it actually is about accessing a park that is important, and the key health behaviors, not only physical activity, but sedentary behavior and weight status. And so we, again, looked at park proximity as the distance to the closest park, the number of different parks that you have access to, and then the total park acreage or park space within an area around the participant household. And so data from the U.S. came from our Kansas City Parks and Physical Activity Project. It was a really comprehensive project where we collected data in the fall of 2010. I had the pleasure of going out to almost every single park in Kansas City, Missouri, and collecting observational data there about what was there, what was in the park, and then ground truthing, you know, if there was the accessibility that we were seeing in the GIS measures. And we had additionally a comprehensive mail survey going out to residents living around these parks. We had about a 27% response rate, which gave us about 900 adults across 122 census tracts in Kansas City, Missouri. So a good geographic dispersion. We had a plethora of different sizes and ranges of parks included in this study. So data for the from Australia was part of the READY study, the Resilience for Eating and Activity Despite Inequality study. The data was collected in 2007, early 2008, and they also included a male survey with a 39% response rate, and they actually brought in a little over 4,300 participants of women, and it was across socioeconomically disadvantaged both urban and rural neighborhoods across Melbourne. So from this data we pulled, we wanted to match it up a little bit similar to what we had in Kansas City. So the analysis that we conducted here were based on just the women from the urban neighborhoods, which is just slightly over 1,700. So the metrics, again, we were looking at the distance to the closest park, as in measuring from the participant's home, a network distance from the participant's home to the closest park centroid. And then that, if that park fell within that buffer, it was included. For Australia, we used the network distance in meters from the participant's home just to the park perimeter or the edge, the boundary of the park. Number of parks was calculated with the count of parks that had that centroid within a 1 mile or 1,600 meter network buffer around the participant's home. And then in Australia, the count of parks was the perimeter of the park fell within that buffer. And then total park area was the total area of in acres of all the parks with the centroid in. So in this example, you know, if we have a buffer and the centroid of it fell within our buffer, then we were assuming that the accessibility, they can reach the middle, the center of the park, and then all of that park acreage was included in it. Whereas in Australia, we use the total area if just the edge or the boundary of the park fell within that 1,600 meter buffer. Both the U.S. and Australia, we were looking at the measure of physical activity, whether they met or not met recommendations defined as 150 minutes or more of MBPA or the 75 minutes of vigorous physical activity. The U.S. used physical activity questions based off of the BRFSS questionnaire, and in Australia we used the leisure time and transport domain of the International Physical Activity Questionnaire. We also incorporated measures about sedentary behavior, and that included the combining, you know, your screen time, TV time, as well as outside of work computer time. And it was dichotomized as 0 to 180 minutes or greater than 180 minutes per day, and that was just based on the sample split. And then in Australia, we just looked at TV viewing time and dichotomized it as 0 to 120 minutes or greater than 120 minutes per day based on the sample split. And then in both the U.S. and Australia, we were looking at BMI status, as previous presentations have looked at, with a BMI of less than 25 being not overweight or more than 25 being overweight obese. So we did a multi-level regression analysis with each participant's census tract as the level 2 grouping variable. And due to the high skewness of the data, log transformations were performed on the 3 park predictor variables. And then subsequently these variables were converted to z-scores. And then we did a separate analysis for each outcome. So weight status, physical activity, and then sedentary behavior, and then each predictor that we were looking at, the 3 proximity measures, so distance to the closest park, number of parks, and area or acreage of parks. And then we controlled for common control variables, age, income, low, medium, or high. And then in Australia, we used the country of birth, and in the U.S., we use race. And then we controlled for BMI in the models that we're looking at physical activity or sedentary behavior as the outcome. So what did we find? Again, the U.S. participant characteristics, we had almost 900 with close to 61% being female with an average age of 51. About half of them were from middle-income households, and more than half of them were overweight or obese. The Australian sample, again, it was a little bit more with the women being closer to 1763 participants. They were a little bit younger, an average age of 33 and a half. Close to 81% of them were born in Australia, and about one-third of them were from middle-income households. And again, nearly half of them were overweight or obese. So the results in the United States data, you'll see that we split this out by males and females. Since the Australia data was only looking at females, we wanted to split our data up as same similarly so you can see results. across gender. So in males, the greater distance to the closest park was associated with higher odds of being overweight or obese. So, you know, the farther away your closest park was, the more likely you were to be overweight or obese. The higher number of parks in that neighborhood area was associated with lower odds of being overweight or obese. And then greater park acreage was just marginally associated with lower odds of being overweight or obese for males. In our female sample for the U.S., the greater distance, again, was to the closest park was associated with higher odds of sedentary behavior. And the higher number of parks was associated with lower odds of sedentary behavior. So again, we're seeing that relationship across multiple metrics of measuring access or proximity to the park. And then finally, for females, the greater park area was associated with lower odds of sedentary behavior. In Australia, for the female sample that we had, the higher number of parks was related to a greater odds of meeting their physical activity recommendations. So here we're seeing a little bit more of that relationship directly to the behavior versus the other ones we saw a little bit more of that relationship with outcomes. Here the higher number of parks was just marginally associated with the lower odds of being overweight or obese. So as a discussion, again, what does all of this mean, all of this research that we presented in this presentation as well as earlier, that access to parks is conceptualized differently throughout the literature as distance to green space or some sort of aggregate of open public parkland. And this study wanted to explore multiple measures to understand how each of them were associated with various health behaviors and outcomes. And that, you know, distance may be important for frequency of park visitation, but really the number of parks provided may provide more open space opportunities. And the increased park area, so larger parks, may be facilitating larger active spaces, which I think was very similar to some of the results that you had found, Dr. Babby. So park access can encourage physical activity in our findings, both to and within parks, and reduce norms or behaviors related to sedentariness, and thereby help reduce residents' risk for overweight or obesity. So again, with all good studies, we had some limitations, as discussed. This is cross-sectional data, so you've always got to ask yourself sort of the chicken or the egg question, you know, which came first. Is it that we're seeing these proximity variables are causing, you know, some of these outcomes, some of these behaviors, or is it that, you know, people that are less overweight or more physically active, are they choosing to live closer to these park spaces? However, one good study showed that availability of park space was associated with park use and physical activity beyond just sort of the, some of those preferences or self-selection for wanting to live near a green space. We did not consider, while we have data collected, across, especially across Kansas City, I went to every single one of those parks and captured really in-depth information about the features and the quality. We did not really look at that in this particular analysis, so I think that that would be an area to really go into to see if it's specific things within the park that are forming these relationships with physical activity and other health outcomes. Likewise, we didn't account for other neighborhood elements. So again, the accessibility, having the sidewalks, if there's issues with safety, like I know Caitlin talked about. So we really need to conduct similar analysis with a plethora of settings and across some of our different groups that's important, you know, youth, older adults, and with respect to both urban and rural populations, persons with disabilities, and race or ethnicity. So, again, findings across different contexts help lend to some of the credibility of the Parks and Recreation research relating to public health and helps us have a better seat at this table for public health and environmental action. So really trying to strengthen this relationship between parks promoting physical activity and being a strong contributor to community health. However, future research should explore park access and health in more diverse communities and worldwide. Thank you very much.
Nice. Well, we've got about 10, 15 minutes for questions. I'll turn it over to you guys, and you can direct your question to specific people or to the group as a whole. I'll start things off, sir.
Yes, I'm Scott Brown from the University of Miami, and I'm one of the people who will be presenting at Booth Arnaz tomorrow morning. So my question is for Susan and
Actually, I think that's a great question, and we actually recently conducted some additional analyses where we adjusted for some additional covariates, including perceptions of neighborhood safety and also some neighborhood-level indicators of socioeconomic status. And we did actually find that, and I apologize, I don't have those results with me, and I didn't have time to incorporate this in my talk, but we did actually find that two or three more of the park access indicators now showed a significant or marginally significant longitudinal relationships when we added in those other covariates. So I think that's actually a very good point, and some of that may have been going on in these analyses. Yeah.
My question is maybe for Gina, maybe related to the first presenter too. My question is, when you compare the U.S., particularly the Kansas City resident with the Australian, the sample, the issue is, do they have a, because the assumption is they are much more, in Australia, they are, I mean, scarcely stated, or they live not in the, as concentrated on the Kansas City. So in that sense, do they actually, when they got the variable or the part, mean the same thing to the resident young sample as the people who live in the Kansas City? Is such a, so many concrete, so many. So does that mean the same thing when they think about part? Do they have more space? I mean, green spaces? I've never been there, so that's my question.
That's an excellent question. I honestly have not been there either. Dr. Kaczynski has been a couple years ago, but I would say that as for the total number of parks for their sample, I don't know if I know that within like their area.
Yeah, there's certainly, when we're doing our analysis, you can see some of the variables are different because there's a much greater number of parks in Melbourne. I was kind of blown away by the number. I don't know what it's like relative to LA or other places, but so, I mean, there or something, or you know, the emphasis there to place on recreation and outdoor space and building living and all that. Where there was a substantially greater number. Let's go here and then over here. Okay.
My question is for Dr. Kathy.
Yeah, that's right.
I just was wondering what your thoughts were about the CPAC or the GIS inventory that has like state parks and all types of different parks. Or do you have any thoughts about there might be differences for state parks versus local parks and popular parks as far as physical activity, maybe see where you work with that?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a good question. It's not something that I've looked at, but I suspect there may be differences because you know, a lot of state and national parks, they don't have equipment to attract children to use the park or you know, that kind of thing, and I suspect they're used primarily for different kinds of activities, and so that may affect how those parks are related to these kinds of health outcomes. But yeah, it's a good question, and it's not something we've looked at, so I can't say definitively.
I'm in South Carolina, so it looks a good bit different than LA. So are state parks, are they in dense areas as well in LA, I'm guessing?
Yeah, so there are state parks in dense areas, but also in, you know, less populated areas. So it wouldn't necessarily be dense, although yeah, some of them are in dense areas.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see, for national level parks, is there sort of the stigma that people are more likely to travel farther?
Well, I was actually going to jump in because actually Miami, you all have a great relationship with some of the national parks in the county area from what I recall. So every community is just so different, but when we're talking about like health equity and talking about underserved populations especially, we have this program called Park Prescriptions where you have physicians writing prescriptions for wellness at their nearest local park. You know, a person of low income status isn't exactly going to get in their car and drive 2 or 3 hours to their nearest national park. And at the same time, the programs and amenities you see at a national park tend to differ from what you see at a local park. So we haven't done any research on that, but we just kind of know from our membership that there are big differences.
Thank you. So my question is, oh, I'm sorry.
I know that with that particular program, they were keeping the lights on until midnight, four nights a week, and sponsoring nighttime movies and family-oriented activities at the same time. So there was programming that coincided with keeping the lights on. So presumably there was just kind of, there's just a lot of activity going on, there's a lot of people around. And yeah, the homicide, gang-related homicides in the area dropped, I guess in the first year in 2007 when they started it, there were seven gang-related homicides in the area, and then in the following year there was just one. So it had a pretty quick impact.
Yeah, and supervision is really important. I think that's what made the biggest difference is that they put so much into ensuring that there was staff there at nighttime. But it's also really understanding your community and making sure that the people who are supervising and leading this are like credible. And so a lot of the kids that would be engaged in the gang-related activity, they were really into sports. They loved basketball, especially. And so those were the types of activities that they would target for the Summer Nightlights program. And that's what kind of drew this community in. So, yeah, it really makes a difference.
Other questions or comments? Hi. Founder in the Bay Area. And so my question is,
the pay-to-play issue, if that's something that you're interested in. I know in New York City, our mayor just made an investment in, I don't know if you've heard of it. So the mayor of New York just made an investment in 35 parks, small parks in low-income neighborhoods to do sort of small-scale rehabilitation projects. A number of them are in councilmatic districts that we have relationships with these council members, so we're hoping to bring some cool innovations there. It's like, for example, some of these adult playgrounds that I really love and talked about a bit. I'm hoping to maybe do something like that. They're fairly small investments. I think, you know, for each park, maybe $1 million, something along those lines. But regardless, all the investment is dedicated to low-income parks. So that's something to keep your eye on. We're trying to work on it in New York, and our mayor is really interested in it.
I was just gonna jump in quickly about some of those thoughts about, you know, understanding the neighborhood and how that might potentially be a barrier for participation in park-based reflexivity or park visitation. And from that same Kansas City native, we have actually started to explore some of the neighborhood environmental variables, litter, graffiti, instability, as well as, you know, what those park service neighborhoods, sort of that boundary around the park consists of. And we've looked at, you know, the density of fast food restaurants, the density of bars, tobacco outlets, nightclubs, things like that that might include a more unsavory crowd, I guess, or other types of unhealthy retail or establishment. And I think those results will be coming out shortly in Allison Linkard, our colleague, is in prep, so definitely we've started to look at those types of variables.
Some of them are housing providers, some of them are just local CBOs, Some are senior service providers. They're kind of all over the place. Some of them also will provide transportation for people, so they can take on like a bus or a van, take a whole bunch of seniors over to the pool to use it. But working at the neighborhood level, really, you know, just really going to where the people are is key to getting anyone to participate in any of these programs, especially with something like parks where they're so local. And, you know, I moved across Brooklyn personally. I went to one park all the time, and, you know, when I was living in one part of Brooklyn, and now I go to another one all the time. And, you know, it's just, that's just how it is when you use a park. You go to the one that's near you, and it's, you know, kind of regardless of what's there, it's like, oh, it's right here, it's beautiful out, it's a nice day, I'm going to sit on this bench. So working with community partners is really important, and it's a huge integral part of our age-friendly work across the board, but especially here.